Hi, my name's Kevin Lee, and I am a film critic and filmmaker based in Chicago. And I've worked with Roger Ebert for many years. I was a supervising producer on his TV show, Ebert Presents at the Movies. And I'm currently a film critic for the website Fandor. And I am responsible for running the first ever Ebert Young Writers for the Arts program. And I think we wanted to specify more arts than film because it's not just about film. It's about film as an art, and it's about training these students to deepen their appreciation and their ability to speak about films as art, and so allowing people to appreciate films as art, and then that allows them to appreciate all forms of art.
Kevin, what is the basic knowledge that critics, writers need to have?
Sure. You know, I think a lot of people assume that to be a film critic, you just have to be obsessively involved in constantly watching movies. I mean, I certainly went through that phase where I was watching like 20 movies a week and just trying to educate myself as best as I could about the history of film, all the different periods, genres, countries. And, as time progressed, I started to realize, well, it's not just knowing your facts and figures. It's also understanding just the principles of cinema, how a shot is put together, how a movie is made of shots, and each shot is like a picture. And a really good movie treats every shot like a great photograph, a great picture. It's where the camera gets placed. It's how the actors are positioned within that frame. And then it's also knowing how to work with the actors to get great moments of emotion and drama. And just, as well as story. I think most people, when they think about films, they think just in terms of plot and performance. But it's more than just plot and performances. It's really about how a movie is put together from one moment to the next.
Talk about, you said, how a shot is put together. What are the elements of that?
Sure. Well, there's, of course, the location, the setting, the staging. And then it's a matter of placing the camera and moving the camera within that space so that the camera kind of helps us to explore the space and make us feel like we're inside the space. And so if a camera is moving quickly, then that creates this really dynamic, energetic feeling. If it's static, then, it feels more contemplative and calm. So we think about actors being the things that bring emotion to the scene, but in many ways it's about light, the kind of lighting and the mood that creates. It's about camera movement. It's about editing. If you've got shots moving really quickly from one to the next, that creates a very exciting rhythm. If you cut very slowly, then that creates a more slow rhythm. It's like music in many ways, A really good movie is almost like watching a symphony unfold through lights and shadows and angles and movements.
I loved your video essay on Dissolves.
Oh, you watched that recently. Oh, yeah. So I should say a little bit about my particular form of film criticism, because when people think of film critics, they think of people who just write reviews, or in the case of Roger Ebert, who had a really, fantastic and long-running TV series, so he was a TV personality. But there is now this amazing new kind of genre of film criticism where people like myself will take movies and recut them, remix them, work with them, and then upload what we've done to the internet in the form of these like 5 or 10 minute videos that really help people to see different elements and different aspects of movies, how movies work, how they get put together. We call these things video essays. So I've made almost 300 of these video essays over the last 7 years. Most of them are on YouTube or Vimeo. And it's really looking deeply and intensely into particular aspects of cinema, so that next time you watch a movie, you'll think about cinematography or editing or staging in ways that you wouldn't have noticed before. It's almost an art form in itself. The way that we explore movies and the way that we can actually now do things with movies as viewers, as fans.
Mm.
Now fans are active and they're creative and they're making things of their own using media. So it's the way that we can kind of take possession of the media that we love and make it our own in ways that we couldn't before.
Mm.
And I think this is one thing that's great about the Young Writers Program, is because it's really encouraging these young voices to take more ownership and be more proactive in terms of, you know, positioning themselves within film and media.
Mm.
It's like every voice matters now in ways that it wasn't the case before.
I guess I wonder, too, with this knowledge that you have about the construction of films, how you look at a film. Over the weekend, I saw an Ozu film called Late Spring that has no dissolves. I don't think it has any dissolves
right,
in
right,
it.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that was one of Roger Ebert's favorite movies by his favorite Japanese director, Yasujiro Ozu. Ozu was a director like no one who's come before or since. I mean, he basically reinvented film language. If you look at his movies, they look like no other people's films because of the way he shot. Part of it is just like the way he positioned the camera at a very low angle, like sitting on a tatami, which is kind of the idea. It's like this is how Japanese people sit and look, you know, at other people when they're inside their homes. So it was very specific to understanding Japanese culture and kind of the Japanese experience of life. And so this is wonderful in that, you know, it's not like you have these universal ways of understanding films. You have to understand specific cultural things in order to understand a movie. And this is great because then it allows you to step outside of your own kind of cultural frame of reference and really explore the world through movies. And that's something that Roger was really, really passionate about. It's like movies don't start and end with themselves on a screen. A really, really great movie will be able to take you beyond what's on screen and really start getting you thinking about everything in the world, you know, about the life you live in and how a movie can illuminate your life in a way that you didn't know before. You know, to be curious about other cultures, about other people, and how they look at the world.
So what do writers and critics write about? How do you...
Yeah, so it involves curiosity. It involves, you know, not thinking like you know all the answers when you watch a film. You don't have it all figured out. At least a very good film critic, in my opinion, you know, a very good film critic is someone who will take a movie as a starting point, not an end point. A starting point to ask a lot of questions about, okay, what is this movie doing? What's it making me feel? What's it making me care about? And then what can I do to explore those things further? You know, what sort of research do I have to do? What sort of questions do I have to ask? What sort of experiences from my own life can I bring in? That's something that he was really good at, Roger Ebert. It's like he would be able to just very naturally bring in his own sort of like life experiences, his childhood, very formative things to bear into like how he was reacting into a film, which would then allow us to really empathize not just with the film but with him. So that becomes this form of communication. It's a form of having a conversation, just using a movie as kind of like a springboard to have a very deep engagement with people, you know, emotionally as well as intellectually.
Yeah, people used to go out for coffee after movies all the time. You know, now it's almost we're blown back and I don't know what to say besides, boy, the special effects were good.
Yeah. Well, that conversation is kind of taking place in all these weird ways now. You know, there's this phenomenon where when people watch TV shows, there'll be a live Twitter stream or a hashtag that people can kind of follow to see what other people are saying just as they're watching TV. And you kind of wonder, is this something that we're going to see with movies? And actually, I think there have been attempts to do live tweeting events where you screen a film and then on one side of the screen is a live Twitter feed where people in the audience get to see what other people are tweeting. So
I'm sure the director appreciates that.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe they do. Maybe as an experience. Well, I mean, it obviously redefines what we think movies are supposed to be about, what the experience of movie watching is about. But let's face it, we're in the era of social media. And so, you know, in some ways, all bets are off. You can have a more traditional experience, and hopefully we'll be able to preserve that. But, you know, people's lives and the ways that they engage with media and movies is changing, and we don't know where it's going to go. So this is something I want to, you know, explore with the students in the Young Writers Program, is that we're not just going to write about films in, you know, in the form of film reviews. We're also going to experiment with social media. I'm going to see if they can write a review on Twitter. Can you get at the heart of a movie and what you got out of it in just that little space? Because it's a very creative exercise. And we're also going to do things like video reviews where people will just look into the camera and address the audience and just talk about the movies they saw, because that's become a new form of film criticism and film reviewing that's very popular. All these young wannabe Roger Eberts, you know, who have their own YouTube channels and are recording themselves talking about movies, they get like millions of views. And so, you know, it's not like film criticism has died, you know, with Roger Ebert gone away and all these older critics kind of gone away. Like, it's a new generation of voices. It's just that they're not in the same places that you know, we're used to finding them. They're not in newspapers anymore, or at least not necessarily or exclusively in newspapers. They've got blogs, they've got YouTube channels, they've got Twitter feeds. And so it's part of understanding what that's all about, you know, all these different channels and all these different opportunities for voices to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Do different things grab us these days? Are we bored with ways that stories used to be told, or are there things that are perennial?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at Hollywood films, by and large, they are these, you know, high multi-billion-dollar budgeted explosion spectacles that are based on, you know, comic book franchises, and that's really where the majority of Hollywood money goes into, is these huge franchise blockbusters that, they really just come down to a bunch of explosions and action scenes. And it's kind of ironic. It's like the louder and noisier these movies get, the harder it is for them to sustain our attention, because we become kind of desensitized. So for me, it's always this question of how do we get viewers to look beyond those types of movies and to be more curious about films that aren't as spectacular, but they have a lot of power if you just settle down and, you know, don't expect a movie to just explode in your face, but just kind of meet it halfway, or you know, really try to tease out what's interesting about it, to make you think, to make you reflect, and to experience something on a more meditative level. And that this is really where the role of a critic comes into importance, because, you know, a loud movie will kind of do its work on its own with a lot of advertising, and you know, It doesn't need to be explained. Everyone kind of gets it. But a more difficult or challenging film, you know, I think a really good critic can help people understand how it works, and how it works its wonders on you, and how it takes you into emotional or, you know, mental places that you wouldn't normally be in. And that's where growth takes place, you know. That's where you kind of step outside of yourself and experience something new.
But is that someplace that you get the feeling people actually want to go?
No, not necessarily.
Okay. You know, so critics have their work cut out for them.
They do. They definitely have their work cut out for them. You know, it's kind of like how life is. You know, we all want what's comfortable, but in the long run, once in a while, you have to go to those difficult places in order to grow from them, grow from those experiences. And there are a lot of movies out there where you'll spend, you know, 2 hours, and it may change your life. It may change how you see things. What is a critic good for, especially these days when everyone has an opinion, everyone is, you know, putting votes on the Internet Movie Database or Rotten Tomatoes or those other websites that, you know, take fan ratings. So what's a critic good for? Why is their opinion necessarily better than others? And I think there is a certain approach to film where if you have a very special understanding, it's like how scientists take reality and make it more understandable to the rest of us. They can actually break it down in terms of how each shot contributes to how you experience a film. You know, degrees of craft that go into performance or into camera movements or into music. You know, a good critic has an understanding of all those different elements and then can explain them to the rest of us.
Well, what does a good critic ask him or herself about a film?
Yeah, well, I think it comes down to for me, it's about two things. It's basically what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling. I mean, those are two very basic human things. I mean, these are huge, huge, huge questions, of course, you know, and it's like we don't think of movies as being kind of up to the challenge of those questions, but there are quite a few that are, you know, that it's not just entertainment. It's not just 2 hours where you can just kind of like forget about the world or escape from the world. I mean, I think a really good movie can bring you back to the world, you know, in a richer way than you were before. And so for me, it's about fulfilling that potential, you know, because I'm a true believer in movies. I really believe that movies are an art form that has that potential to make that kind of effect on us and on the world. And so I hold a pretty high standard for movies. And if a movie, you know, is just meant to entertain me, that's fine. You know, I get it. You know, if you just want to be entertained, then I can evaluate a film in terms of how well it entertains you. But there's always going to be a special place for me in terms of those movies that strive to do even more than that.
You would want to name a few.
Name a few. You know, you got movies like Citizen Kane, which a lot of critics consider the greatest film of all time because every single shot just seems like it's, you know, reinventing cinema or just coming up with new rules for how to make a movie. It was made by, you know, Orson Welles when he was 23 years old. It was just like a kid in a candy store who, this genius who just suddenly fell in love with movies and just wanted to figure out everything he can do with movies. And just that, if you want to watch a film that just kind of opens your eyes to all the possibilities, that's a film that you can watch. Ozu, we talked about Ozu. Tokyo Story is probably my favorite. Hitchcock's Vertigo, Hitchcock movies are always great in the sense that, you know, those films are really entertaining, but at the same time, they're very powerful on an emotional and psychological level, too. Last couple of years, I'm a huge fan of Birdman, mm-hmm. even though I get into arguments with critics who just think it's really pretentious and kind of bombastic, and it's just this guy showing off his camera work, you know. With these actors
that
are just being
that.
Yeah. But I actually am thrilled by how this movie moves through space. And you know, I take a lot of inspiration from it actually in terms of like how, you know, I left that movie just thinking like, how do I move through space? So I'm really grateful for that film for opening my eyes to that. You know, Boyhood was a really wonderful film as well in terms of, you know, it covers 12 years in a kid's life. And, you know, after these 2.5 hours, you just feel like, you know, a whole decade has gone by, you know, and you really feel that movement of time. And that's really powerful.
Mm-hmm. You know, from your perspective there in Chicago, what does the Hawaii International Film Festival look like?
Well, I am just kind of amazed by the wonderful emphasis on the Asian Pacific cinema.
Is that so unique in the world or what?
Absolutely, especially within American cinema. I mean, we have, or especially among American film festivals, because there are, you know, large cities in the U.S. that have Asian American film festivals. Mm-hmm. Sure, but the thing is, this is the Hawaii Film Festival. That really creates a very special emphasis and understanding of Asian Pacific film and culture that you don't see in the other festivals. There's one film that's in this festival that I think is particularly wonderful from a cinematic standpoint. It might be challenging for audiences to follow. It's called The Assassin, directed by Ho Xiao Shen, who's considered the greatest director to come from Taiwan. So if you want to see one of the all-time Taiwanese cinema masters, this film took him the better part of a decade to make. It's a kung fu movie. It's a martial arts film, except that there's almost no martial arts in it. And the martial arts that happen are unlike any martial arts scenes you've seen before.
There's a little Bollywood? No. That'd be horrible.
No, it's just he keeps moving away from the action because it's a very, very contemplative film. It's more of a spiritual martial arts movie. And it's actually the most powerful things that happen are when someone decides not to fight. And it's meant to be something that you go back to and keep revisiting and getting new things out of every time.
Wow.
So, you know, so a movie isn't just like a – and that's the problem with so many Hollywood films. It's just like, you know, a can of Coke that you just like drink once and then you forget about. You know, to drink, to treat a movie like the best glass of wine you ever had, so that you've, you know, you can remember that that bottle and like where it came from and everything that went into making it. That's a whole different approach to a product. You know, a lot of people think of movies as just products that you just consume and you dispose of and you just, you know, you get your 2 hours of fun and you forget about it. But to treat a movie as something that can last with you for a lifetime, I mean, that's super ambitious, but it's also something worth striving for. And when you actually experience it, it's like nothing else. This is why this Young Critics program is kind of really an attempt to kind of start planting the seeds for a higher set of standards and values, you know, starting from the audience, you know, starting with these young critics who are in many ways representatives of the Hawaiian film audience. And so, you know, we're going to have this really intense conversation with them over the next few days, and they're going to come out of it with higher expectations and standards for what they want out of movies. And hopefully that will translate into, you know, wanting more out of the movies from Hawaii, because you have having a stronger kind of local scene of people who are very passionate about films and want to make great films here.